Prince of Waiting. The cult is named after Melman, the giraffe character in the Madagascar movie franchise. He was born on Sunday in a Bouval Zoo park. He is 170 centimeters tall and weighs 55 kilograms. Zookeepers say Melman is a special baby.
A giraffe birth here. It's our second birth since we've had the group of females established for a few years. So for us, it's still quite an important and exceptional event because it's not every day that we have a giraffe birth.
The giraffe keepers say Melman stood on his feet for the first time 45 minutes after being born. Since zoos have opened in France, visitors can enjoy seeing little Melman playing around with his mother. The birth of the baby giraffe is good news for wildlife preservation, as according to estimates, the number of the animal in the wild has dropped by about 30% since the 1980s.
The issue of marine trash has long worried scientists and environmentalists. Now a French engineer has invented a robot to help clean ocean waste. The Jellyfish Bot is a remote-controlled electric-powered boat that helps clean rubbish from the surface of the water. It's 70 centimeters long and 70 wide, almost the size of a suitcase. The robot can collect everything from plastic bottles to masks and even oil and petrol. Despite its wide-ranging utility, Jellyfish Bot has a rather simple mechanism.
To collect trash, you have to do something as simple as possible. Because otherwise, if we put too complicated mechanisms, it can get blocked and things can get stuck in the system. We designed the robot with a slide mechanism that goes towards a net, so we fill up the net, we take back the net, and that's the end of it.
The trash collecting robot is being used at around 15 ports in France, lightening the workload of local cleaners. It has also been exported to countries including Japan, Norway, and Singapore. The makers have also developed an autonomous version of the boat.
Malaysians at a vaccination center in the city of Kuching have witnessed a surprising scene. A T-Rex turned up to get his COVID-19 jab. Fitness instructor Kenny Sia dressed up in a dinosaur costume to amuse people, doesn't he look fabulous, and protect himself. Sia said he made the decision to lift up the spirits of frontline health workers, is exhausted by vaccinating over 5,000 people a day. People rush to take pictures with him, hailing his appearance and historic. Funny. A giant 3D cat has risen to fame in the Japanese capital, Tokyo, bringing joy to citizens amid the COVID-19 pandemic. A massive billboard featuring the cat has been installed in one of Tokyo's busiest districts. The realistic-looking cat on a 4K resolution screen appears every few minutes between advertisements. Depending on the time of day, the cat appears differently and sometimes meowing at people walking by. The companies that set up the billboard hope that they can cheer people up during the dark era of the coronavirus pandemic. The display has already caused a frenzy in the city and among the social platforms, with many expressing joy and amazement at the technology.
Peru is full of natural wonders worthy of appreciation in each of its regions. A zoo in the capital Lima has now unveiled an incredibly cute and adorable Andean alpaca calf to attract visitors amid dwindling zoo-goers due to the coronavirus pandemic. This fairy baby alpaca named Paquita is just 1 month old and was introduced to the public on the eve of the 200th anniversary of Peru's independence from Spain. The zoo has also displayed its families of llamas, alpaca, and vicuña. The three are members of South American camelids' biological family and are traditionally valued for their soft and warm wool. They live in the Andes Mountains, which lay thousands of meters above sea level. Peruvians are proud of the history of wools associated with these species, which have common ancestors with camels.
four German tightrope walkers have set a new world highlining distance record by crossing an Arctic valley in Sweden. The group tiptoed a distance of more than 2 kilometers between two mountain peaks in Lapland barefoot. The line they walked on was set at a height of 600 meters. The four members of the team walked the line one after another successfully, despite challenges including the wind and long distance. It took 2 days for the team to rig the line between the two peaks.
A herd of elephants migrating in China have been making headlines for months. Now they have once again attracted attention. Experts monitoring the animals this week noticed two females engaged in a dramatic fight over the herd's leadership, where they kicked and bit each other. The tussle soon ended after a male elephant succeeded in calming the belligerent giants. The fight happened in China's southwestern province of Yunnan. The herd embarked on a lengthy journey last year after escaping a nature reserve and has since trekked hundreds of miles. The elephant's migration is the longest one in China's history.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the compassionate, the merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran, by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hausa Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Hello everyone, dear brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, and we're with you with another edition of the program Insights into the Holy Quran. In this edition of the program, we'll be discussing the commentary of the 23rd chapter of the Holy Quran, Suratul Mu'minun, or the Believers. Now let's just listen to the related verses and then we'll be back. So stay with us.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim.
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful. The people divided their religion among them into sects, each faction in what it has rejoicing.
Dear listeners, in the previous program, we discussed 52nd verse of the chapter. Before that verse, the story of many prophets had been presented, and specifically in this chapter, we had different stories and different facts regarding how these prophets lived and how hard they try to invite people to monotheism. But in fact, When this Arabic word hadhihi ummatukum was used in the previous verse, it means that all the communities of the prophets were viewed by the command of Allah as one, and they were ummatan wahida. They comprise only one nation. Now, it is interesting that in the 51st verse, the Almighty Allah says, فَتَقَطَّعُوا أَمْرَهُمْ بَيْنَهُمْ زُبُرًا. But people have cut off their affair of unity between them. كُلُّ حِزْبٍ بِمَا لَدَيْهِمْ فَرِحُونَ. Each party rejoicing in that which is with them. This verse talks about causing division. فَتَقَطَّعُوا أَمْرَهُمْ بَيْنَهُمْ زُبُرًا. So, this fact, causing division, is a great disaster, and it has a long story. So, following the invitation to unity and harmony in the former verse, mankind is now given a warning about conflict, about disintegration, about separation, with this phrase, فَتَقَطَّعُوا أَمْرَهُمْ بَيْنَهُمْ زُبُرًا. But people have cut off their affair of unity between them into sects. And interestingly, the previous verse ended saying, فَأَنَا رَبُّكُمْ فَاتَّقُونَ. So fear me. And this not fearing from the Almighty Allah is one of the causes that will actually cause division. فَتَقَطَّعُوا أَمْرَهُمْ is preceded by the fact, by the very phrase, فَاتَّقُونَ. And if you do not fattakun, if you do not follow this rule, your affairs will be cut off into different sects.
We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
In this
word.
Series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic
approach. We will inshallah discuss the chapter
وتمثل القرآن في أخلاقه وفعاله فيه الفؤاد تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا.
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hausa Seminary of Qom.
Anyway, it is wonderful that every one of these parties rejoices in that which is with itself and discriminates against the other. The verse continues saying, كُلُّ حِزْبٍ بِمَا لَدَيْهِمْ فَرِحٌ. Each party rejoices in that which is with them. The Arabic word zubur used in this verse is the plural form of the word zubra, and it means a part of the hair on the back of an animal that can be gathered together and separated from the rest. This word has been applied to everything that can be separated from something else. So the sentence, but people have cut off their affair, refers to the division of the nations into various groups, which we talked about in the previous program regarding the previous verse. The Almighty Allah said that based on divine point of view, all nations comprise only one nation, ummatan wahida. Anyway, some believe that the word zubur is probably a plural form of the word zabur, meaning book. So the verse can mean, if this was the case, that each of them followed a heavenly book and denied the heavenly books of the others, while they had also originated from the same divine source. This is also one possible meaning. However, the sentence, each party rejoicing in that which is with them, كُلُّ حِزْبٍ مِمَا لَدَيْهِمْ فَرِحُونَ, strengthens the first interpretation because it is somehow speaking of various parties and their biases in favor of their own claims. At any rate, this verse expresses an important social fact that the ignorant bias of groups that have been chosen certain religious schools of thought results in them closing off their minds to any other expression of divine truth. And this is what is blocking them off the light of knowledge. And interestingly, this state arises from egotism and narcissism, and it is the greatest enemy to arriving at the impartial ultimate truth and reaching to the unity of people. Because contentment and complacency in one's own tradition and that sense of alienation and hostility to other than that is often expressed when we hear something from a religion other than ours and we shut it off, we close the doors to it, and we somehow dismiss it and we run away, lest the truth apparently other than what we are used to be disclosed to us. Thank you, dear listeners, for staying with us in this program. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also visit our website at parsetoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
the Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech.
the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Welcome to another episode of Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by famous Iranian Shiite orator and lecturer, Hujjatul Islam Ali. Stay tuned. As you might know, nowadays the foundation of family is broke up in the Western world. No more you can find a strong bonds between the members of a family. One reason is the free presence of women and girls in the society. Another reason is degrading the role of wives and mothers in the family and society. The Western world made the women busy with different jobs and made them forget their main roles inside the family. Free and illegitimate relations between men and women inside the society changed the definition of the family foundation for Westerners. In the past, family included father, mother, and children. However, you can find new definitions of family today.
خانواده جایی است که یا یه زن و مرد با هم زندگی میکنن یا دو زن یا دو مرد، یعنی خانواده های همجنس، اونا هم خانواده است.
For instance, family for the Westerners could consist of one man and one woman, two women or two men, and single parents, whether the child with the father or the mother. Now, among the single parent family, we can see that the parents are divorced or the child has never seen his mother or father. In other words, the child is born out of wedlock. Also, the families that include one man and one woman live with each other without any conjugal contract, or in other words, they have a white marriage. In such type of marriage, the spouses have no commitment towards each other and they can leave the family whenever they like. These are some of the problems of the foundation of family in the Western world. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, for listening to this episode of Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Ali. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care. Fi amanallah.
2015, Saudi Arabia formed a feeble coalition before invading the poorest country in the region. The Saudis hope to have a quick, easy victory in Yemen while crushing the Ansar Allah movement, a resistance group they considered as their main enemy. The war has turned out to be a long and difficult one. It has also had another turn the Saudis and their allies never thought of. The enemy they sought to annihilate has now become stronger over the past few years, shaking the Saudi kingdom to the core, all through their homegrown drones. At first, the Ansar Allah movement tried to fight back with Scud missiles. Lack of desirable results prompted the group to bolster their defense program through working expansively on drones. It took the Yemeni group almost 3 years to wage its first drone operations against the encroaching enemy. During 2018, the Ansar Allah announced to have struck Dubai Airport more than 1,200 kilometers away with a new long-range drone called Samad 3. At the start of 2019, Brigadier General Yahya Sari announced that they had made great advances in drone manufacturing and, having built up stocks, this year will be the year of drones. He was not wrong. In fact, the operations reached their crescendo in mid-September 2019 when Yemeni drones attacked the state-owned Saudi Aramco oil processing facilities at Abqaiq and Khurais in eastern Saudi Arabia. A great shock to Riyadh and its allies. Both facilities were shut down for repairs, cutting Saudi Arabia's oil production by about half. The attack also showed that the Patriot missile systems could not guarantee the safety and security of the Saudis, a nightmare for Riyadh. In addition, the attack made it clear that if the Saudis didn't stop targeting Yemeni civilian targets, they would have to brace themselves for retaliatory attacks. It was since then oil facilities and airports became the prime targets of these retaliatory attacks. They sought to put economic pressure on the Saudi kingdom and trigger discontent at the continuation of the war inside the kingdom, with the ultimate aim of forcing the Saudis to end the bloody war, which has killed tens of thousands and caused what the United Nations describes as the world's largest humanitarian crisis, with millions facing famine. By 2020, Yemeni drones and missiles became the two effective deterrents against the Saudi-led coalition. In February and June that year, the drone attacks, intensified with missiles, forced the Saudis to call for a temporary ceasefire. By 2021, the Ansar Allah forces had already proved how deadly their drones could act against any intruder, a point that could give the group a strong bargaining position in coming peace negotiations. By and large, the first aim the Ansar Allah drone program pursued was convincing the Saudi-led coalition to stop the war. The second was to impose economic pressure on the invading side by targeting the main source of income. For Ansar Allah, using homemade drones are economical and at the same time effective. The Saudis have already proved to be at the end of their tether as they cannot figure out a solution to counter these drones, despite all of their state-of-the-art weapons. In fact, through carrying out drone operations, Ansar Allah put the Saudis in a no-win situation. Their missile systems failed to protect their billion-dollar oil facilities against cheap drones. Meanwhile, drones have been part and parcel of military force worldwide. According to data from Globe Newswire, the global military drone market size is projected to reach $23.78 billion by 2027. Military spending also tends to come in larger increments, as a single US Predator drone costs approximately $4 million. Given its volatile status, West Asia, where proxy wars are becoming a common phenomenon, is very likely to be the main customer of drones. Against such a backdrop, the Ansar Allah movement has invested wisely and properly in what is predicted to be the main war tool. The movement could inflict shattering blows to the Saudis through a series of long-range strikes by, originally, garage-built drones. The Saudis fear the group will increase their knowledge about drones. If they do, any military or political miscalculation will cost Riyadh dearly. A few months ago, Ansarullah unveiled a new drone with even longer range, aiming to strike targets in the homeland of their enemies, thousands of kilometers away. The Samart 4, whose range has been increased to greater than 2,000 kilometers, and the bomb load upgraded to two bombs of up to 50 pounds each. Ansarullah's drones have taught the Saudis and their allies that even the poorest country in the region can defend, fight back, and take revenge against the enemy, no matter how much that enemy is rich or equipped. The resistance movement never gives in.
If you ask me, why do we stand here so unafraid of everything around me? Proudly I would say, I am a Muslim. If you ask her, why does she dress that way, all covered up in a world that gives it all away? Proudly she would say, I am a Muslim.
Islamic laws.
If you ask him, why does he still pray 5 times a day when so many others have strayed? Smiling, he would say, I am a Muslim.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of God. Welcome to the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Javad, hosting this program. And sitting in the studio along with me, Sheikh Javid, well, the dear guest speaker in this program, Islamic Laws. Welcome to the program, Sheikh Javid.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
The pleasure is ours. Stay tuned. We'll be back. Going to talk about the laws of divorce according to Ayatollah Sistani's fatwas. Before that, let's take a listen to a short biography.
The Grand Ayatollah Sistani comes from the family of scholars and pious men. He learned theological and rational sciences from many eminent and well-known religious scholars. At the age of 5, His Eminence started learning the Holy Quran. He was then admitted in a religious center for reading, writing, and for learning basic mathematics and geography. In the beginning of 1360 Hijri, he started studying basic Hawza lessons. He also studied a number of books on philosophy like Sharh Manzumah Sabzawari and Sharh Ishraq. Meanwhile, he attended Kharij lectures by the late Mirza Mehdi Ashtiani and the late Mirza Hashim Qazvini. In the late 1368 Hijri, he migrated to Qum to accomplish his studies in Fiqh and Usul. His Eminence left Qum for Najaf al-Ashraf. On having arrived in Najaf, he began attending Qayatullah Khoi and Sheikh Hussain Hilli's lectures in jurisprudence and the fundamentals of jurisprudence. In 1380 Hijri, Ayatollah Sistani traveled back to his hometown, the holy city of Mashhad, expecting to stay and settle down there. In the same year, he was awarded a permit by Imam Al-Khoi and another by Sheikh Hilli, certifying that he had attained the level of ijtihad, that is, deduction of legal judgment in matters of religion.
Sheikh Javid, since we are talking about the laws of divorce according to Ayatollah Sistani for a while, let me ask you this question, because it may happen to some people. Sometimes the women are mentally or physically tortured by their husbands.
Sure.
All right? So the wives are always in trouble this way or another. And then should they or can these wives or women turn to or resort to a resident religious authority or a scholar or an alim to get a divorce in that case? And normally we know that in lots of those cases, the husband is not willing to either change his behavior or mend his behavior and have manners to go about his life properly, or even divorce his wife easily. So they would make the situation very hard for their wives.
Yeah. Well, I think we discussed this issue in one of the previous episodes to some extent, but I still would like to shed some light on this.
Thank you.
On the issue, because there are a lot of family members struggling with this problem. They have domestic problems. The wife, for example, is mentally and physically, as you rightly mentioned, tortured by the husband, without the wife being able to defend herself. You know, she is helpless, she is defenseless, and she wants to know the solution, of course. Obviously, first of all, I want to touch on the question you raised. You said that whether a resident olim, a resident cleric, not a religious authority, because we have to, I think we have to choose these words
very carefully.
Yeah,
yes.
Very carefully. A religious authority is a mujtahid.
Yes.
And a local olim is not a religious authority. He's a simple person with little knowledge about religion, okay? Now, the question that we need to discuss is whether such a person who lives in a locality has the right to pronounce a divorce or carry out a divorce on behalf or to carry out a divorce without consulting the husband, or he doesn't have such authority. Of course, there's no doubt whatsoever that he has no such right. Unfortunately, we see that such incidents do take place in some countries because the people have no knowledge about their religious rights. They have no knowledge about knowledge of Islamic laws, and they think they are actually under the impression that a religious man, a man who has studied, for example, in one of the Islamic seminaries, has the right, according to Islamic Sharia, to carry out or conduct a divorce. But that's not the case, okay?
He's not acting like a priest in Christianity.
Yeah, in Christianity. Maybe according to Ahl-Sunnah, I have no information about Sunni legal
scholars,
rulings or their authority or their limit of permission, okay? Their limit of authority. As far as the Shi'i scholars are concerned, of course, they have no right to pronounce a divorce without consulting the husband, because we are talking about divorce, about unauthorized divorce, okay?
I see.
A divorce conducted without consulting or without taking permission of the husband, okay? And such incidents, I'm telling you, do take place a lot in some countries. People, women, families turn to a local alim, a resident alim, and then ask him to carry out a divorce. And he does, he carries out the divorce without even knowing that this divorce is not valid according to Islamic Sharia.
In Islamic societies, Sheikh Javid, that can be carried out, the divorce can be carried out, even without the permit or consent of the husband, by the Hakim Shar, or what do you call it?
A qualified mujtahid.
Yeah, qualified mujtahid. Or even a prosecutor.
like a high-level prosecutor in the legal system, all right? They would be able to permit like a wife actually to get divorced, if I'm not mistaken.
I'm not going to use the word prosecutor
mm-hmm.
because it may be misunderstood, okay? I prefer to choose the word qualified mujtahid, okay?
Mm-hmm.
A qualified mujtahid, the most qualified mujtahid. Of course, the most qualified mujtahid has the right to pronounce a divorce
mm-hmm.
only after following or adopting two courses of action, okay? As I said in one of the previous episodes, the first thing the mujtahid will do is to reach out to the husband and talk to him to convince him to either provide for his wife,
mm-hmm.
support his wife financially, or else
mm-hmm.
he should divorce his wife, okay? If he's neither supporting his wife financially, nor is he willing to divorce his wife, and he puts his wife in a limbo, she does not know what to do. She's mm-hmm. neither a wife, nor she cannot consider herself as a wife because she is not receiving anything from her husband.
Right.
And also she suffers from hunger, from she has nothing to eat, okay, and to survive.
The untenable situation.
Yeah,
actually.
That is the situation she is suffering from. And in that case, when the mujtahid, the religious authority, a qualified mujtahid, comes to understand and realize that she is suffering from an unbearable situation, a situation which is generally unbearable,
mm-hmm.
then in that case only, the mujtahid will carry out the divorce.
I see.
The Office of Ayatollah Sistani is currently providing the following services. 1. Board of Istifta, replying to religious questions. 2. Helping the poor, needy, homeless, and those who have suffered losses by earthquakes and floods. 3. Sending books for people who want to understand and learn Islam. 4. Hajj delegation. 5. Sending preachers. Board of Istifta is a link between Ayatollah Sistani and people. It provides them with answers to questions pertaining to religious, ideological, social, and educational matters in accordance with the verdicts and rulings of Ayatollah Sistani. For more information, visit the website of Ayatollah Sistani at www.sistani.org. You can also ask your questions through the following email, english@sistani.org.
If a person divorces his wife 3 times in a single session, all right?
Yeah.
Would that be considered as a kind of triple divorce or a single one?
Well, that's a good question. Triple divorce is not valid according to Islamic Sharia and according to the Shia school of jurisprudence, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Shia Muslims living in a predominantly Sunni community or Sunni society are under the impression that triple divorce is valid, okay?
Right.
Because it's valid according to Sunni jurisprudence, okay? When a husband or when a man divorces his wife 3 times
mm-hmm.
in a single session, then that woman becomes permanently haram for that man,
mm-hmm.
okay? That's called three-time divorce, okay?
Yes.
Triple divorce. And therefore, there will be a need for a muhallil, okay?
Yes.
And of course, we will discuss what muhallil is.
Mm-hmm.
But in according to Ayatollah Sistani, triple divorce is not valid. And it will be considered as one divorce, provided that all the conditions, all the requirements for a valid divorce are met. Okay,
yes.
All the conditions for a valid divorce. In the absence of one of those conditions, for example, if there aren't two just witnesses,
mm-hmm.
witnesses, then that divorce is going to be invalid. Okay, this is just one of those conditions, and there are other conditions which we will
discuss in the following episode.
Inshallah, we are going to discuss the conditions for a valid divorce in the upcoming episode. That was the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio. Thank you very much for listening to us. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
This is IRIB English Radio.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah.
Answering your doubts and questions, and questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
Allah, who is Ar-Rahman? Allah, who is Al-Mannan?
La ilaha illallah.
Please send us your emails through our email, which is englishradio@irib.ir.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu. This is your host Musa al-Bahadiri coming to you from your program Q&A on Islamic Beliefs, broadcasting yet again, as usual, from IRIB English Radio. Joining us in the studio is our dear and esteemed guest, Sheikh Murtada Karimi from the Islamic Seminary of Qom. Dear Sheikh, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah, and thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us today after last time's session. It was a little bit hectic, if you ask me.
Exactly.
Our question topic, it was the a woman whose husband has passed away, and she marries another man. In the heaven, in the paradise, will she be reunited with her first husband? Will she stay with her second husband, and so on and forth? And we had six different scenarios. And we also touched briefly upon the subject of huris, huri'in for women as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that was quite a hectic discussion last time, and we basically reached the conclusion that we do not know for certain, but we have narrations that indicate that according to the woman's nature, she will be pleased enough with one huri'in.
That's true.
As mentioned before, we had six different scenarios mm-hmm. for our question. Please, let's start off with the first scenario.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. So the first scenario is that the wife and husband, they both are in paradise. So in that case, if both of them choose each other, they can be together in heaven. Of course, I'm not giving these six scenarios answering your question. I'm talking about all the scenarios when husband and wife, they pass away, and on the day of judgment we want to see whether they can be together or not. So if both of them are in paradise, they can choose each other. So it depends on the choice of both of them. Now, one interesting point is that, according to some narrations, for example, if them we know that both heaven and hellfire, they have many levels. Not all the people are in the same level. Now, it is very likely that the man is, like, for example, in level 10, and the woman is in level 5. I mean, and the level 10 being better than level 5. So if the man is higher in rank in paradise, and he chooses to be with his wife, then the wife will be raised in rank as well. So it's a blessing from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala for both man and woman.
So he does not have to descend in ranks.
No. And vice versa, if the woman is higher in rank and she chooses the man, then again they can be together in that higher rank. So it's a kind of reward for these believing men and women, that if they want to be together in paradise and one of them is higher than the other in rank, they will be together in the higher rank, not in the lower one.
As a blessing from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
We have a verse in the Noble Book of Quran that, for family, for parents and children, if all of them, they are in heaven, then Al-Haqna Bahim Buriyatahum, I think this is the phrase in the Quran, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will join them together in that higher level of paradise. We are not talking about the scenario in which, for example, the children are in the hell and the parents.
They're all in heaven, in paradise.
They all are in paradise. They will be joined together. We're talking about family. As for wife and husband, they can be if they choose to be with each other. It's been mentioned in a narration from Imam Sadiq alayhi salam. As I mentioned, for all these details, we need the narrations. I mean, intellect has nothing to say in this regard, and we need to refer to the verses and the narrations. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam says, in heaven, if man is higher in rank than his wife, and the man chooses his wife as his partner, then she would be with him in that higher rank. And vice versa, if the wife is in the higher rank and she chooses the man, they will be together in that higher rank. So this is the first scenario. The second one is that the woman is in paradise and the man is in hell. In that case, for sure, they cannot be together. The third.
Not only that, she would not want to be with a
exactly,
disbeliever.
Sure, naturally. Yeah, yeah. And the third is vice versa. The man is in heaven and the woman is in hellfire. They cannot be together. The fourth scenario is that both man and woman, both wife and husband, they are in hellfire. So both of them, they can be together suffering from those.
Yeah, they can be together, no problem.
Yeah, no problem. So there is no issue of being together at all when you are suffering from all those punishments.
So that's good to know, at least.
Yeah. The fifth one is that the man has more than one wife in this world, and all of them, they are in paradise. So again, the answer to this scenario is that it is up to the man. He can choose any of the women that he wishes. Or, he is also able not to choose any of them and to be with Hurul Ain. So it is based on his choice. The main scenario that we are talking about is when a woman has had more than one husband in this world, one of them has passed away or martyred and she remarried, and now all of them are in paradise. And as I mentioned in the previous program, some narrations tell us that in paradise, women will not have a request to be with more than one husband. Or even Hurul Ain.
Yes, we said it was contradictory to their essence, to their nature.
Yeah. And if we have this in mind, now we have this scenario that a man has married more than one husband in this world. Now all of them are in paradise. According to the narration, again, it is left to her to choose. So she can choose one of them or none of them. And to be with, when I say none of them, it means that she prefers to be with Hurul Ain, if we accept the idea that Hurul Ain are for both men and women. Now, interestingly, this has been mentioned, I mean, the same question has been asked by Umm Salama, one of the wives of the Prophet. She asks the Holy Prophet about this scenario. She says that a man who in this world, a woman in this world, she has married more than one man, and on the Day of Judgment, all of them, they enter paradise. So what will happen to her? I mean, she would be the wife of which one of the men? And as I mentioned, these narration again tell us that because the Holy Prophet didn't say that she can be with all of them, it can again tell us that on the Day of Judgment in Paradise, women will not have the request to be with more than one husband or partner. And then the Holy Prophet says that, oh, Umm Salama, the man will, that woman in Paradise will choose the best in her eyes. So, because we know that the ranks, the realities are known to all the people in Paradise, the woman will see the ranks and levels of all her husbands. So it is left to her. For example, the Holy Prophet talks about the manners of the man in this world. And anyway, the answer to this scenario is that on the Day of Judgment, if a man has had more than one husband in this world, it will be, and all of them are in Paradise, the option is for her to choose one of them.
Just another question there, Sheikh. What about a single woman who passed away also single? Maybe she was never able to get married. What about her on the Day of Judgment?
It is like the scenario in which the woman is in Paradise and the man is in Hellfire. So what you mentioned
give her
is like that.
Husband.
Yeah.
Find her husband, basically.
Yeah.
Okay.
So for example, we can think of many examples. Maybe one of the best examples is Pharaoh and his great wife, Asiya.
Yes, exactly.
But we know that for sure he will be in Hellfire and she will be in Paradise. So for such cases, for the single righteous woman and for women who are in paradise but their husbands are in the hellfire, the answer is that, again, it is based on their options, their option and choice. They can choose those men who are in paradise as well. They can choose one of the men who are in paradise, and the other choice is that they can be with those Hurul Ain according to the viewpoint that says that Hurul Ain are for both men and women. So the single righteous women who have not married at all, on the Day of Judgment in Paradise, they can choose one of the righteous men in heaven. I mean righteous men in this world, of course. On the Day of Judgment, all the righteous men are in Paradise, or they can be with Hurul Ain. It is based on their choice and option.
Dear Sheikh, you touched briefly upon a subject about a family who are all righteous living together in heaven. For example, a father and a mother and a son. This son, naturally, he will also get married in heaven, assuming, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he will also have